This AgriTalk podcast is brought to you by Resistance Fighter, an educational program from Syngenta for growers invested in managing resistant weeds and protecting the future of their operation. All right, let's get this week started. And a big week it is. Midterm elections tomorrow, USDA crop production supply and demand report on Thursday. And many farmers are into a final push to get the 2018 corn and soybean crops out of the field. And yeah, they're running into another roadblock from the weather.
From the studios of Farm Journal Broadcast, this is AgriTalk, agriculture's national talk show since 1994. Here's your host, Chip Flory.
Good morning, and thank you for joining us again this morning. Welcome to AgriTalk. One more day. One more day of those campaign ads. That's all you've got left. And we all head to the voting booth for the midterm elections, and a big turnout is expected. And when the turnout is big, the polls have a tough time predicting the outcomes of the state races, which means that the district votes can be even more difficult to predict. So no matter what you see in the polls, you've got to get out there and vote. Make sure that your opinion is counted. We're going to get the latest on some of the close races in the House this morning from David Wasserman from the Cook Political Report. That's coming up in the next segment. I'm interested in getting David's take on how President Trump has been involved in some of the campaigns of some of the tighter races across the country. Has Trump helped the Republican candidates in these states and in these districts? And in the second half of the show, it's Monday, we'll get an update on what's happening in the used machinery market from Greg Peterson, Machinery Pete. Greg will get us up to speed with some of the latest trends in used equipment. And of course, we want you to be part of the conversation. If you've got a question or a comment for today's show, give us a call, 855-482-5524. Or if you'd rather let us know what you're thinking via Twitter, just include hashtag AgriTalk in the message. That way I'll be sure to see it. Right now, let's bring in Clinton Griffiths.
Hey there.
Get an update on the news. What's going on, buddy?
Oh, not much. It is election day-ish, week-ish, something. It may take all week for us to actually know how these elections turn out. I'm just warning people. We're probably not going to know by, 9 o'clock tomorrow night exactly what is all said and done on this deal.
Yeah, that is exactly right. But of course, we're going to be seeing the news stations are going to be trying to do their best to call elections and district races and Senate races and everything all night long. It should be some interesting TV.
Yeah, it will be. And that's where we're going to start on the news today. The president doing rallies in three states: Ohio, Indiana, Missouri, ahead of these Tuesday midterm elections. So he's still out there pushing talking points. A new Farm Journal Pulse. This is a poll that we do. We had about 1,500 people, farmers and ranchers, polled last week and asked whether they have a favorable view of President Trump. 55% say they do, which is up 4 points from the same survey taken August of this year. 55% of those surveys say their sentiments toward the president will impact their November 6th election, quote, a lot. Yeah. It is interesting to see that number where it is.
Well, and especially when we talk about a Farm Journal Pulse poll, because we're going out to the farm community to take that poll.
Right.
You go into some of the other segments of the economy, and the movement has even been more dramatic than that. And it all comes back to something that I'm going to ask Wasserman about here in just a second, and that's the economy. I mean, we always hear that suburban America will vote with their pocketbook. Well, suburban America right now is doing pretty doggone good.
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder how that's going to influence the elections in some of these tighter district races out there.
Right. Some of that polling from the Pulse poll showing that the president pretty steady across age groups, but there was a pretty significant gender gap in rural America. More than half of women surveyed, 51%, reporting an unfavorable view of the president. Yeah. So that will be interesting to watch as well. A few of these state races, Chip, Florida, Rick Scott's leading incumbent Democrat at Senator Bill Nelson, 49-47.5 within the margin of error, but that's, you know, a pretty big race. In Tennessee, Marsha Blackburn, she's in a close contest with Democrat Phil Bredesen. Texas Senator Ted Cruz holding just a slim advantage, 50% versus 47% against Rep. Beto O'Rourke. And in Missouri, Democratic Senator Claire McCaskill, Republican challenger, Attorney General Josh Hawley tied 47%.
Yeah, so, that Missouri race has been going back and forth, man.
Right. Yeah, it is interesting. On the trade front, Friday, President Trump saying the U.S. is getting much closer to a trade deal with China. The president saying, quote, we'll be having dinner and we'll be discussing it. The two leaders planning to meet in Buenos Aires at the G20 later this month. The Chinese president giving remarks at the opening of the China International Import Expo in Shanghai. Yeah. Vowing that China wants to buy more stuff from others and emphasizing that China has opened up more sectors this year to foreign investment. I just saw this report from Reuters, Chip, just came down. The value of export orders to the U.S. signed at that trade fair is down 30% on the year.
Yeah.
As higher U.S. import tariffs make goods from batteries to farm tractors costlier.
Right.
So a lot hanging on that deal.
Yeah, no question. You know, the comments from Xi were... At the trade expo, I thought were encouraging.
Sure,
it didn't do anything to me to make me think that this meeting down in Buenos Aires is not going to happen. I think it is going to happen, and I think there's going to be some constructive talks leading up to it.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of what everybody's watching for.
Yeah, well,
can we get back to actually talking on this thing and making some headway?
Right, right, exactly. All right, Clinton, thanks, man.
Yeah, you bet.
All right. Let's talk the weather now with meteorologist Michael Clark from BAMWX.com. The reason I'm doing that, Michael, is because it is about as dreary as it can get here in Northeast Iowa right now, dude. What is going on with this glob of precip moving across the middle of the country?
Oh, it's a slow-moving front, but as that thing plows to the east tonight, places in the eastern belt are going to just be drilled with heavy wind and possibly some strong storms. And then it just brings in just the Arctic hounds. I mean, we're talking just brutally cold air the next couple weeks.
Brutally cold air. Now, when I hear that, I mean, you're not talking about – we're not going south of 20 degrees, are we?
Oh, easily. Yeah,
we'll get into
the teens and some places into the lower teens, record overnight lows for sure. I mean, the period, basically the 10th through the, or the, let's say the 8th through the 15th is just going to be incredibly cold. I mean, you're talking, you know, 15 degrees below normal.
15 degrees below normal. And I suppose there's going to be some precip come along with it.
There'll be a couple of clippers. I mean, in the eastern ag belt, I wouldn't be shocked if there's some accumulating snow events here mid-November. I mean, it's not out of the question. So now the pattern will turn drier out through week two, especially in the central and western plains. It'll get much drier, but that storm track in the east will need to be watched in the Ohio Valley for sure.
Okay, you mentioned wind for the eastern belt. What about out west where there's still some corn in the field?
It won't be as bad. I don't think there's any major concerns. Definitely bigger concerns east.
Gotcha. Thanks, Michael. I appreciate it. Again, I'll say I wish that it was a better forecast, but I still appreciate the update, bud. All right, man. Yep, that is Michael Clark, meteorologist at BAMWX.com. All right, coming up next, we're going to talk with David Wasserman from the Cook Political Report about what to expect in some of these House races. That's coming up next on AgriTalk.
Growers face enough worries today. SDS and nematodes shouldn't be among them. Alevo Seed Treatment from BASF is the only product that offers effective protection against both SDS and nematodes throughout the critical growing period. Growers get amazing early season protection for stronger profit potential at harvest. So worry about weather. Don't worry about SDS or nematodes with Alevo. To find out more about Alevo and how to protect your soybeans, talk to your seed dealer or your BASF rep. Grow smart with BASF. Always read and follow label directions.
Don't miss your chance to win one of two brand new John Deere Gators during the Valent Fully Loaded Sweepstakes. The 2019 John Deere Gator is the ultimate utility vehicle for getting things done. Fast, powerful, and capable of handling payloads up to 1,500 pounds, the John Deere Gator works just as hard as you do. Enter for a chance to win now at ValentFullyLoaded.com. That's ValentFullyLoaded.com. No purchase necessary to enter or win. Ends March 10, 2019. See official rules for details at ValentFullyLoaded.com.
They say to really know a man, you have to walk a mile in his boots. Well, my channel Seedsman has logged more miles than I can count in mine. As crops grow, so does his commitment to making sure there's nothing overlooked. And come harvest, we celebrate in the cab. Him working away, making plans for next season. Look, anybody can sell you seed. Only a channel Seedsman gives you everything you need to make the most of it. Find yours at channel.com/boots.
The mighty Prosaro, king of fungicides. Its fast action and long residual make it the keeper of grain quality and yield. The hammer of head and leaf diseases. The number one reducer of scab. When your goal is greater wheat quality and higher yield, use Prosaro fungicide, and the crown of higher profit will be yours. Learn more at prosaro.us. Always read and follow label instructions.
It seems like everybody is dealing with some weed resistance. Let's bring in Dane Bowers, herbicide technical product lead for Syngenta. Dane, what is the most important thing for growers to understand when we're talking about managing resistant weeds in soybeans?
That's a great question, Chip. I think what I would say is the key to managing resistant weeds and preventing further development of resistance is diversification. So when you diversify your program, you decrease the chance of a weed being able to overcome one single site of action. And so one of the key things here is utilizing multiple effective sites of action in your herbicide program. The importance there is that it's very difficult for a weed to overcome the effectiveness of multiple herbicides, where it's much easier for it to find to escape through one. And really the key word there is effective multiple sites of action, because we know that it's really important that the grower select a herbicide that has effectiveness of all the sites of action against the key driver weeds in their field. And the other thing I think that is really important here is that growers need to be using a pre- and a post-emergence herbicide program. So depending only on post-herbicides is really putting tremendous selection pressure on those post-herbicides. So we can take a lot of those weeds out with a pre-emergence herbicide and adds more diversity to the program as well. So I would recommend using a pre-emergence herbicide like Broad-X XC or Boundary. We can follow that with a post-emergence application of herbicides like Flexstar GT or Prefix. And each of those herbicides has multiple effective sites of action against key broadleaf weeds and also provides residual grass control as well. And if growers are in a dicamba or a Liberty program, Boundary or Broad-X XC are also an excellent fit.
All right, yeah, hit them once, hit them twice, hit them three times, and take them out. All right, thank you, Dane. That was Dane Bowers, herbicide technical product lead at Syngenta. Learn more about best practices for managing resistant weeds through the Resistance Fighter program from Syngenta.
We're agriculture. We feed the world. And it's what we love to talk about. Join the conversation.
Yeah, join the conversation. Give us a call. It's 855-4-TALK-AG. That's 855-482-5524. You can also tweet at us. And when you do, make sure that you include hashtag AgriTalk in the message. Okay, big midterm elections coming up tomorrow. Let's bring in David Wasserman. David is the House editor for the Cook Political Report. David, I know it's a busy time. Thank you so much for making time to be with us on AgriTalk.
Sure thing. I love you guys.
All right, man. Hey, I want to start with a little bit of the history here, because when you look at the history of the midterm elections, when we're 2 years into a president's first term, I mean, it is a headwind for the president's political party, and the opposing party normally does pick up some seats in the House, right?
That's true. And the question right now is, how many will Democrats pick up? The magic number is 23, and Republicans have an awful lot of exposure in the House. Many different types of districts. Democrats' route to the majority runs mostly through the suburbs, but there are some Farm Belt districts that are on their target list, and we'll be watching, in particular, the upper Midwest, states like Iowa and Minnesota. We'll be watching Illinois. So right now we see Democrats as the favorites for the majority in the House, but the map in the Senate makes it very difficult for them. And we even see Republicans as a narrow favorite to pick up a seat or two.
Okay. Now, in the House, you said that you see the likelihood that the Democrat Party will take control of the House. But boy, David, go back a month ago, and the expectations were widespread that the Democratic Party was going to be able to take control of the House. Now, it seems like some of that momentum has faded.
There are a couple things that have happened in the last month, and I think they largely offset. The first is that Republicans nationally have closed Democrats' enthusiasm advantage, and we've seen this in a variety of polls. Today's NBC Wall Street Journal poll shows the Republicans virtually erasing what was left of Democrats' advantage, and I think it goes to show that these cultural flashpoints like the Kavanaugh confirmation fight and migrant caravans are better suited for galvanizing the Trump base than tax cuts or tariffs were necessarily. But something else is benefiting Democrats, and that's money. Democrats have just raised staggering sums of money at the candidate level, and they're accounting for over 60% of the candidate money that's being spent in the most competitive districts. And so in that battlefield of competitive seats, Democrats do have the messaging advantage in the closing weeks, and we've seen a lot of races that have remained trouble spots for Republicans.
Yeah. Speaking about the campaign spending out there, I've seen some reports that up to $1.5 billion spent on TV ads alone in this election season. I mean, it's great news for the TV stations out there, but boy, we get bombarded by that message on a constant basis. So, David, what is going to determine it? You mentioned a couple of different areas that we're watching very closely. We've got the farm state districts out there that obviously we're interested in on AgriTalk. But won't the suburban districts really determine what the split in the House will be?
They will, and I categorize races into a couple different buckets. The first set of Democratic targets, the lowest hanging fruit, are these upscale suburban, what I would call Whole Foods districts, where got a very elite electorate that have questioned their Republican identity in the era of Trump. These are districts that may have voted for Mitt Romney in 2012, but voted for Hillary Clinton in 2016, and Democrats could pick up about a dozen of those seats, which is more than half of the 23 they need for a majority.
Wow.
The second basket would be what I would call Trump surge zones, the places where you have historically Democratic electorates that broke for Donald Trump in 2016. These are places like the Iron Range of Minnesota and northern Maine and downstate Illinois and maybe even upstate New York. And these are places where we've seen Republican numbers recover somewhat in the past month, as we've seen voter preferences polarize along the lines of their choices from 2016. But the third basket, and I think the one that's really going to decide House control, are the middle income suburbs that are less elite, but where Trump maybe won by single digits in 2016. And these are places like Kane County, Illinois, the outer Chicago suburbs, like Des Moines, Iowa, the suburbs of Richmond, Virginia, the suburbs of Kansas City. And we're seeing those kinds of districts break towards Democrats in the closing weeks, in part because of their financial advantage.
Yeah. Yeah, interesting. Okay. So there's 435 House seats. How many of them are legitimately up for grabs?
We see 75 races as competitive in our final ratings, and it's a very lopsided list. There are 70 that are held by Republicans, just 5 by Democrats. And if Republicans have any hope of hanging on, then I think two things need to happen. Number one, they need to pick up several Democratic seats. And their best opportunities are in Minnesota, in southern Minnesota and the Iron Range, in Nevada, where there are 2 Democratic open seats. But they also need the vast majority of close races to break their way. That's not impossible, but it's very difficult.
Okay. You know, on the opposite side of those 75 seats that are up for grabs are those that I think you classify them as solid Democrat or solid Republican. And
that's right.
I think, to me, it's a little surprising how the counts differ for the Democrats and the Republicans on those seats that you're calling solid.
Yeah, there are far more solid Democratic seats than solid Republican seats. And look, it's, in some states, it's a function of how Republicans drew the lines after the last census. They had the power to redraw 4 times as many boundaries as Democrats, and so what they did was, rather than draw themselves a bunch of safe seats, they spread their voters pretty thinly over a lot of seats so as to be able to win a large majority. And we're seeing that perhaps start to backfire a little bit in states like Michigan, maybe Ohio, although Republicans are looking decent there, perhaps in states like North Carolina as well. So this is a pretty broad map. There are a lot of districts that Republicans have, you know, very narrow advantages that could kind of tip over if Democrats have a really, really big night. So the range of possibilities is still pretty large.
Okay. Let's talk about some of the farm state races out there. And I want you to start in my district, District 1 of Iowa, where we've got incumbent Bloom against Democrat challenger Abby Finkenauer. What do you think is going to happen in that one?
Well, we can never count Rod Blum out because he has beat the odds the last 2 election cycles.
Yep.
But it does look as if he's behind today. Abby Finkenauer would be one of the first women elected to the House from Iowa. She would also be the youngest Democratic woman, I believe, elected to the House. And Republicans have attacked her on having a thin resume of life experience. And if those Trump voters come home, and this is a district that Trump carried by 3 points, then Blum has a chance at reelection. But the most recent polling we've seen shows Blum stuck at around 38-39% of the vote and Finkenauer in the mid-40s.
Okay. What other races do we need to watch closely?
Well, Iowa's 3rd district is southwestern Iowa, and that's a place where tariffs, I think, have hurt Republicans, even though Congressman David Young is anti-tariff and pro-free trade. The Democrat Cindy Acme appears to have a narrow lead in that race. And then one kind of late-breaking race we're watching is Iowa's 4th district, Congressman Steve King. And, you know, the conventional wisdom out on, you know, the East Coast is that King is vulnerable because of his associations with very far-right figures, some would even say neo-Nazis. But I think what's made the race competitive back in Iowa is that he hasn't really run a real campaign. He's mostly broke, and the Democrat has raised about $2 million and has been on the air basically unanswered for 2 weeks. King just finally went up with a recycled version of an ad from 2014. So the argument there for Democrats is that King is AWOL from the district.
Wow. Okay. All right. So how long is it going to take to hash all this out, do you think, David?
I think we'll have a pretty good sense of how things are going on early in election, on election night, to be honest. Okay. We have a couple of key indicators where we'll see some of the first votes reported in the Indiana Senate race, in Kentucky's 6th district, which is a toss-up race, and several of the seats in Virginia. So we're going to be looking at those as signs of just how big a night this is for Democrats.
Yeah, and once the momentum gets rolling for one party or the other, it's awfully difficult to slow that momentum down on election day, no question. David, thank you so much. We really appreciate your time.
All right, have fun tomorrow night.
You bet I will. That's David Wasserman from the Cook Political Report.
Current price times 1,000 acres, carry the one.
These days, it's hard to make the math work for your soybean fields. The BASF Liberty Link system with Liberty Herbicide makes it easier. Start with a 2-plus bushel per acre yield advantage. Add in lower system input costs and more complete weed control, and you get an extra $33 or more profit potential per acre compared to Asgrow Roundup Ready to Extend soybeans. Grow smart with Liberty Link and BASF. Always read and follow label directions.
It's time to get dirt rich with new Poncho Votivo 2.0 corn seed treatment. The increase in microbial activity in the soil helps get more nutrients to the plant, and you get an average 3.8 bushel per acre yield increase over the original Poncho Votivo, all with the trusted insect and nematode protection you're used to. So be dirt rich, because that's smart. Ask your seed dealer for the new Poncho Votivo 2.0 today. Grow smart with BASF. Always read and follow label directions.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
And Brian Grady's out on call here this morning, and I'm going to go ahead and give you an update on what's going on in the markets. Got a little bit of strength going on in the corn market, and I think if you would sit back and really try to dissect exactly what's happening in corn, they're going to take a look straight at the daily charts. We had a solid close on Friday above the 100-day moving average in December corn futures. And with the professional trading funds, really not heavily short, but they're not heavily long at this point either. They're going to be looking at what's happening on the charts and making some trading decisions based off of that. So closed Friday above the 100-day moving average in East Corn was probably enough to bring some follow-through buying to the market today. But this is one of those days where, yes, it's important where you open, but it's way more important where we close in this market. If we can hold on to 2 to 3 cent gains in December corn futures today, I think that's a pretty good performance by the market. Soybeans, mixed trade, mostly steady prices in that market right now, waiting for some price direction from the demand side of the marketplace. And then on the wheat side of things, we've got winter wheat futures under some light pressure today, with spring wheat futures trading just slightly higher. Biggest moves in the ag markets, definitely in the live cattle and feeder cattle markets. We've got feeder cattle trading sharply lower this morning. Live cattle futures moderate to sharp losses. And then we've also got some moderate losses going on in lean hog futures. So we're going to take a close look at what's going on the demand side of the pork and beef markets. But we need to get some solid cash cattle bids out there to bring some support back into the cattle trade.
Save time and capitalize on market opportunities with Pro Farmer's Daily Advice Monitor. Whether on your desktop or on your phone, visit tryprofarmer.com and get a generous 1 month free trial. Pro Farmer only focuses on the news that impacts the market, so you won't scroll through pages of articles to find what's really impacting your business. Plus, get full access to cash bids, charting tools, and more. Visit tryprofarmer.com right now. That's tryprofarmer.com.
Go behind the scenes of Ag Day and get straight talk on the issues pushing agriculture. Introducing Farm Sense, a new podcast from Ag Day host Clinton Griffiths.
Join me each week as I go beyond the headlines and get personal. My goal is to take a common sense approach to tackling real life problems. Perspective rooted in my rural upbringing and featuring some of the best minds agriculture has to offer.
Farm Sense with Clinton Griffiths is available where you access your favorite podcast, iTunes, Google Play, and now the new Ag.
I'm Andrew McRae, inviting you to join me for Farming the Countryside, farmer-focused podcast. It's all about production agriculture. Farming the Countryside is available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. It's brought to you by Nutrien Ag Solutions, the world's largest provider of crop inputs and services.
Hey guys, if you haven't heard Andrew's Farming the Countryside podcast yet, give it a listen. He's doing a great job with these things. Just get on the AgriTalk app and search for Farming the Countryside, Andrew McRae, and you'll enjoy them. I enjoy them. I enjoy them a lot. Welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody. Great conversation there with David Wasserman from the Cook Political Report about some of the things that we need to be watching and what's really in the background of this midterm election is, as we've got one more day, and I'll bet Greg Peterson, Machinery Pete, we got one more day of ads, Greg.
Oh, joy. My dog is getting sick of them.
I tell you what, it gets a little hard to take sometimes, and what I like now is that the local stations, even the national stations, are going out and doing interviews with voters, you know, about how frustrating it is, and it cracks me up, because then they'll go to a break and it's one political ad after another.
I just have one hope, and okay. Maybe I'm too old or too much of a Pollyannish guy. I don't know. But with these political ads, Chip, it doesn't really matter what side of the aisle they're on. I would just like if the person running for election would talk and not let all these other derogatory comments come in. I think we're all kind of tired of that. But
yeah,
that's just me, maybe.
It would be a whole lot more fun. It'd be easier to take. If the candidates talked more about what they're bringing to the party rather than what's wrong with the other guy or woman.
Right. So if I were a candidate, you know, this seems too simple to me, but I would actually apologize to my opponent on behalf of this crap that gets aired under the name of this, all this big money. And it's like, hey, let's just talk about issues. But again, that's just me.
Yeah, you know, and you do have to pay attention to the taglines at the end of the ads, don't you? Because if you've got the candidate saying this ad was sponsored by me or endorsed or approved or whatever, well, then it's the message from the candidate. But so many times it's an ad produced or sponsored by the Democrat or Republican Party, and those are the ones that just get hard to take.
What are we teaching our children by airing that junk? That's just, anyway, one more day, like you said, Chip. Hey, and Chip, I hear congratulations are in order from last week. Was that your first grandchild?
First. Yep. Yep. Wow, my very first one.
Awesome.
Yeah, Marin Rose. So
very cool. Well, congratulations, Chip.
We're pretty excited about her. She's perfect, Greg.
Of course she is. That's awesome. Awesome. She's not expressed an interest red or green yet, or blue, or she's not picking sides on the tractor equipment yet. Or
you know, since I tell you what, she's wearing a lot of orange since she was born right there at Halloween. I don't know. She could, she could be an AGCO.
An AGCO, Marin AGCO. Good work. Very good.
All right, man, let's get to it. Pete's Pick of the Week.
Machinery Pete's Pick of the Week is brought to you by MachineFinder.com. Where can you find the most comprehensive inventory of John Deere certified pre-owned tractors, combines, and sprayers? MachineFinder.com. Sometimes the best new addition to your fleet isn't new.
All right, so I've got a file of things, and I try to keep tabs of different pieces of equipment that we talk about on the show. And, Greg, this one comes up from time to time, the old 9770 STS combine. What do you got?
Yeah, it does, Chip. These slightly older 8 to 11-year-old machines, just pre-Tier 4. And last Friday on a nice farm auction in Aurora, South Dakota, kind of east-central part of the state, it was a 2009 John Deere 9770 STS, 1,797 engine hours. It sold with no heads, went for $127,000. Wow. And if we pull back, you know, again, because that's just a number, you know, what we try and do over the years is provide context. So if you look at just the 09 model, 9770s, Chip, that 127, that's the highest auction price in 32 months. Now, if we looked at the average auction price on an 09 model over the last few years, so far this year, it's just under $81,600. Last year, $84,500. So really not that much of a dip this year. That shows kind of increasing demand, I think. And if we looked at the current average dealer advertised price on a 2009 model 9770 in our machinerypete.com website, which there's a ton of them for sale, comes into $111,663. So again, that's average dealer price. And then the premium for a very nice one, again, Friday, was $127. And of course, it's a very difficult time right now. But when times are tough, what rises to the cream to the top is the demand for the best quality used. And I think that was a good example there Friday in South Dakota, Chip.
Well, and what about the availability of a machine like this now, Greg? Because once it goes through, once it gets to that second owner, or maybe even the third owner, it odds of it moving back out into the marketplace are pretty low after that, until it's been used up, right?
Right. Yeah, no, that's a good point, Chip. And again, so I think what happens on these retirement sales, which I believe the sale Friday, it was by Burlage and Peterson up there, a great auction firm. I think it was a retirement sale. But yeah, you don't find the super nice ones
right
like this. And yeah, there's not a ton of them sitting on dealer lots. Typically, if they take one in on trade, they already know a guy who wants it, and poof, it's gone. So yeah, they're holding their value really well. And again, that's not just 9770s. It applies across combines in that 8 to 10, 11, 12-year-old range if they're nice.
Yeah, I get that. But when it comes to combines, it's almost like guys have decided, listen, that's what I want. That's the model I want. I want to get one that's between, I don't know, 1,500 and 1,700 engine hours. They've got a picture in their mind of what they want when it comes to a combine. So when it's available out there, if they got to pay up a little bit extra, or they think they need to stretch a little bit on that auction, they're going to do it.
Right, because the two things it comes down to is those guys bidding there or online will say, well, when am I going to find one this nice?
Right.
And the other thing is, what's a new one cost?
Yes.
And that makes you bid twice more, and then the price goes from 121 to 127, and that's if you tagged along with me for 29 years, Chip, that plays out every day. And it's really in that kind of that 8, 10, 12-year-old range. Combines are a good example, but tractors, the same thing.
Sure.
Because the new stuff is so much more expensive, you know, that's what people want. Now, if you chew on that kernel of truth, which we talk about every week, and it's true, to me, again, the real value spot is that, you know, that maybe that 3 to 6 year old model, that there might be a few more on the dealer lot, you know, but guess what? If that's got low hours in 5 years, that's going to be a 9 year old machine with low hours, and everyone's going to want it then. So jump it when it's 4 years old and it'll come out ahead.
Yep, absolutely. Do a little bit of planning ahead and make sure that you hold on to plenty of value when you decide to let that machine go down the road. Hey, what else happened up there at that auction?
Yeah, it was a good auction, Chip. Just a couple other highlights on the tractor side. They had a 2011 John Deere 9430T track tractor, 36-inch tracks, 2,054 hours, sold for $112,000. They had a red tractor, a couple of them actually, a 97 Case IH 8940, front wheel assist, just over 4,100 hours. That brought 57,000. And actually the same exact price, 57,000, on a 2010 Case IH Puma 180 with 1,260 hours, no loader. And then a tillage item I thought was pretty good, Chip. Sometimes the bigger 50 to 60 foot items have been the soft spot on the tillage market, but they had a 14 model John Deere 2210 field cultivator 50 foot that sold for $34,500, so pretty decent there. So that was again up in Aurora, South Dakota on Friday.
Right. Okay, let's stay up north. Take us over to Northeast Michigan. What happened over there?
Yeah, the day before, Chip, last Thursday in Standish, Michigan, which would be, if you're looking at Michigan there, it's just above the thumb.
Okay.
On the other side of the water. And it's my friend Scott Sikora with Sikora Auction Service. Just a fantastic auction company. They had a farm sale, 10 John Deere tractors. I'll just give a couple of the highlights. They had a 95 model John Deere 8400, 4,850 hours, sold for 63,000. a 2001 8130 front wheel mechanical front, 4,332 hours, one for 78,000. A 2001 8310 mechanical front, 3,182 hours, sold for 80. And let's give you a combine here, two chip. They had a 07 John Deere 9860 STS rear wheel assist, 2,108 engine hours, went for 67,000. Now, I got to tell you, Chip, there was an interesting tweet. I tweeted about that John Deere 8400. Again, it was a 95 model, 4,850 hours, sold for 63,000. Mm-hmm. So I tweeted that, and one of our followers, you know, great, we love the interaction out there on social media. And his quote was, he said, "Pete, they will get cheaper." And I hear that all the time, but I got some interesting numbers for you off the break I could share on 8400s.
8400s. Okay, when we come back, we're going to do that. They will get cheaper. Yeah, that's sounds like he wants to buy one, Greg.
I think so.
All right, we're talking with Machinery Pete, Greg Peterson. When we come back, we're going to get some more details on those 8400s. And, of course, we got to get the stories that Greg's telling this week.
Prepare for the future of ag technology at Farm Journal Media's Ag Tech Expo, December 3rd through the 5th in Indianapolis. Whether you're a novice or a tech-savvy early adapter, Ag Tech is your go-to source for the latest in the industry. Customize your event experience and gain a competitive edge with more than 25 educational breakout sessions focused on precision ag, using data, machinery and iron, and sustainable technology. Grower and retailer registrations only $99. Sign up today at www.farmjournalagtechexpo.com.
Find it now at shopfarmjournal.com. Brand new to the shop is the best of tractor tales, as seen each week on U.S. Farm Report. This two DVD set features dozens of classic machines and the collectors who bring them back to life. You'll get one DVD that's all green, the best of John Deere. The second DVD includes classics like Alice Chalmers and many more. Buy one DVD for $29.95 or buy the set for $49.95. Order today at shopfarmjournal.com or call toll-free 877-847-9599. You can find it now at shopfarmjournal.com.
Save time and capitalize on market opportunities with Pro Farmer's Daily Advice Monitor. Whether on your desktop or on your phone, visit tryprofarmer.com and get a generous one-month free trial. Pro Farmer only focuses on the news that impacts the market, so you won't scroll through pages of articles to find what's really impacting your business. Plus, get full access to cash bids, charting tools, and more. Visit tryprofarmer.com right now. That's tryprofarmer.com.
First-generation farmers are a special breed. Farm Journal business editor Annalisa Laca helps these ag unicorns tell their story on a new podcast, The First Years.
It may have been hard, but there's a lot of good things that came out of it. A lot of time we spent together and our kids, I think, were better for it.
Join me each week as I chat with first-generation farmers and ranchers who have what it takes, grit and determination, to start from nothing.
The First Years with Annalisa Laca is available where you access your favorite podcasts, iTunes, Google Play, and now the new AgriTalk app.
In farming, getting things done early has a way of setting you up for success. Like using Corvus for an early season win over weeds. Corvus keeps even the toughest weeds from gaining a foothold. Multiple sites of action deliver superior control of emerged weeds. And later, Corvus reactivates with just a half inch of rain to take out any new weeds that may have sprouted. So get an early season win against weeds with Corvus for end of season rewards. Always read and follow label instructions. Corvus is a restricted use pesticide.
Farmers are busy harvesting across the country, and most are using the data they collect to evaluate the outcome of the products and the inputs that were used on each field this year. Channel Seedsman Adam Piggott from Cleghorn, Iowa, is here to tell us about the Channel Field Checkup Series using field data and the Channel Custom Crop Report. Adam, give us an overview of the Channel Field Checkup Series.
The Field Checkup Series is a series of on-farm visits conducted by a seedsman during crucial stages such as seedling, vegetative, reproductive, and maturity stages. Seedsmen utilize Climate Field View to collect the data so they can include very crucial information and share that with the grower.
So you've got all this data coming in from the field. How do the channel seedsmen then turn that around and put it to use for their growers?
Seedsmen are using digital tools such as Climate Field View for the Channel Field Checkup Series to really help us document observations from farmers' fields and to communicate that through digital technology to the grower.
All right, tell me a little bit more about FieldView and how the Channel Field Checkup Series works.
First, the farmer needs to share his data through FieldView with his channel seedsman. The seedsman will then compile all the data throughout the season and create a custom crop report to send to that grower. That crop report can really be sent at any time. I like to send my custom crop reports after collecting all the data through the season and get that to the guys after the maturity stage of Field Checkup Series.
Gotcha. All right. Thanks, Adam. Next time we'll hear more about how the Channel Custom Crop Report is used to begin planning for next season's crops. Farmers can learn more about the Channel Field Checkup Series at channel.com. And you can find Channel on Twitter and Facebook. Just search Channel Seed.
When you think of Palmer Amaranth, water hemp, ragweed, and mare's tail, doesn't it just make you want to give them the pounding they deserve? Now you can with Diflex Duo Herbicide. It's the post-emergence corn herbicide with two proven sites of action. So you get powerful control of the toughest weeds, built-in resistance management, and excellent crop safety. So don't just hit weeds. Pound them like never before with Diflex Duo. Learn more at DiflexDuo.us. Always read and follow label instructions.
Get an early season win against weeds with Corvus for end of season rewards.
And welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody. I'm your host, Chip Flory. We're talking with Greg Peterson, Machinery Pete. And at the end of the last segment, we were talking about an 8400, John Deere 8400 that sold. And Greg, you wanted to get into some more detail on the average prices of those 8400s. What do you got?
Yeah, well, it was just interesting to me, Chip. It's happened a lot over the years. I'll post an auction price on a super nice piece of equipment like that 95 8400, 4800, 50 hours that sold for $63,000 Thursday in Michigan. And folks will comment and say, oh, well, you know, things are tough. They'll get cheaper. All I deal in is data. So I just responded and said, well, interesting. Average auction price so far on a John Deere 8400 this year is $44,486. Last year it was $43,300. 2 years ago it was $42,064. So again, sentiment, very understandable. You know, when things are tough, whatever, things will go up, things will go down. But, you know, need to keep eyes open to what's real. And these nice, and these older models, whatever color, you know, same with the Magnum tractors, they hold their value pretty well. So if you assume that they will go down, you know, that doesn't always play out.
Right, right. And as the numbers of those good quality JD 8400s has maybe been tightening up a little bit, your average price is inching to the upside here as those tractors get some more age on them. I think that's doggone interesting.
Well, it's, you know, it's easy to just assume the opposite. And the folks outside of ag can't understand how a 20-plus-year-old asset can go up in value. But all we have to do, Chip, is think back to, you know, that farm auction in Montevideo, Minnesota, back in August with, I think it was a 97 John Deere 8300, super low hours on it. I think it was like 863 hours, but that brought 95,000. So that was the highest auction price in 5 years. So again, the same message to all the listeners, which they already know, but when you take great care of your equipment, you know, these kind of things become possible.
Yeah. 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 No question about it. Okay. What other kind of questions are you getting, Greg?
Well, sort of on the same topic, Chip, I had really an interesting question on Facebook last night. I had posted a thread. I graduated college in 88 from Gustavus Adolphus, a little college in Minnesota, and I don't know if I was feeling nostalgic for college, but anyway, I went into our machinerypete.com website, grabbed a link to 64 1988 model tractors for sale, and just posted them with some pictures, different colors. And Ron Swan, one of our followers on Facebook, had a question. And he said, hey, Machinery Pete, how desirable would a 2010 model John Deere tractor be for collecting? And good question, I thought. Now you say, well, a 2010 model, who would think of that as a collector item? But one of the trends, and we've kind of already touched on it here with that 97 7009 model selling for a premium price. These just pre-tier 4 tractors, like on the combines, with low hours, we're seeing the auction prices go up. So if you think about it, if they're going up now when they're 10, 15 years old, mm-hmm. what will the demand be there for them in 5, 10, 15, 20 years? Mm-hmm. So it made me think of a couple folks I know around the country who years ago started thinking of John Deere 4455s that way. I posted a famous video. People remember the guy in New York, a young guy that started collecting 55 and 60 series deer. And I know people that have done the same with the Magnums on the red side. Hmm. You know, taking something 5, 7, 8 years old with like new super low hours and buying it to hold it. And now, the pre-tier 4 thing is becoming more of a louder buyer demand point. So that was a pretty good question, I thought.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, we kind of have a perfect example of it this Saturday, Chip, in Davenport, Iowa.
Okay.
Because on the sale, it's Mecum Gone Farming, which we think of them as the antique tractor guys. But on this sale, there's a 2008 John Deere 8530 IVT ILS pre-tier 4, 1,520 original hours. And I posted a picture of it on our Twitter and Facebook this weekend, and there were 500 clicks to the link in less than a day. And back on July 17th in Northwest Iowa, our friend at Zomer Auctioneering, Mark Zomer, sold a 2007 model 8530 with 2,823 hours IVT ILS for $172,500, which was the highest auction price in 4 years. So that 8530 Saturday in Davenport, I don't know if there'll be guys after it who want to use it, and maybe guys who want to hold it. I don't know.
Who want to hold it. Yeah. Well, we talked about it earlier. You know, you got to be thinking ahead on what the value of that machine is going to be when you're done with it, and plan ahead. These guys are thinking the same thing. That's interesting. That's interesting as heck. So, we're almost out of time, Greg, but I got to ask, what are you blogging about?
Well, there's a blog coming tonight you're not going to want to miss, folks. It was a guy who passed away last June up in Greenbush, Minnesota. His name was, I believe, Dick Novacek. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. But Dick made two of his own tractors called the Big N. And his son Neil reached out, sent me some awesome pictures and videos, and the story of his father, who he said was just a real humble man, didn't ever want to blow his own horn or whatever. But these tractors he made, Chip, are incredible. And we'll put the story out there tonight, so it should be fun.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. What other videos have you posted here that I got to see?
Well, if you haven't seen it, folks, you might want to hop out there. Just go to machinerypete.com, click on the video link. On Saturday, I posted a video of a 75 John Deere 4400 combine with 500 actual hours in the field combining in Nebraska. Pretty fun.
That is primo right there. A 1975 with 500 hours on it?
Yeah. It sold September 1st on a farm auction by Grand Island for $13,000 was a record. And I told the owner, Kyle Poland, hey, send me a video when you get in the field. He sent it. That's what we posted on Saturday, Chip. It was really fun.
That is too cool. Too cool. No question about it. Greg, thanks, buddy. We'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good, Chip. Take care.
You bet. That's Greg Peterson, Machinery Pete. Thanks for listening today, everybody, and thanks to David Wasserman from the Cook Political Report for joining us. Come back this afternoon for AgriTalk After the Bell. I'm going to have Allendale President Steve Georgie on with me. And tomorrow morning on AgriTalk, we're going to talk about sustainability in the beef industry, and we'll also get some more on the elections from Jim Wiesmeyer.
They say to really know a man, you have to walk a mile in his boots. Well, my channel Seedsman has logged more miles than I can count in mine. As crops grow, so does his commitment to making sure there's nothing overlooked. And come harvest, we celebrate in the cab. Him working away, making plans for next season. Look, anybody can sell you seed. Only a Channel Seedsman gives you everything you need to make the most of it. Find yours at channel.com/boots.
Prepare for the future of ag technology at Farm Journal Media's Ag Tech Expo, December 3rd through the 5th in Indianapolis. Whether you're a novice or a tech-savvy early adapter, Ag Tech is your go-to source for the latest in the industry. Customize your event experience and gain a competitive edge with more than 25 educational breakout sessions focused on precision ag, using data, machinery and iron, and sustainable technology. Grower and retailer registrations only $99. Sign up today at www.farmjournalagtechexpo.com.
Thanks to the Resistance Fighter Program from Syngenta for sponsoring this AgriTalk podcast. Visit resistancefighter.com and talk to your retailer or Syngenta representative about how to best manage resistant weeds.